This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. The second season of the popular true crime podcast, Dr. Death, focuses on the case of Fareed Fattah, a hematologist and oncologist in Southeast Michigan. While practicing medicine, he gave unnecessary chemotherapy and other treatments to patients in order to defraud Medicare and private insurance. In 2015, the doctor was convicted to decades in prison. Laura Beale is a health and science journalist and the host of Dr. Death, as well as other fine Wondery shows. Laura, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you.
We're also talking with Heather Schwering, an audio producer and reporter for Wondery who worked on the series. Hi, Heather.
Hey, how are you?
Great. A lot of people in Michigan will remember the headlines very well in this case from 2014, 2015, during Dr. Fattah's trial. But I wonder if you can take us back prior to that. Tell us a little bit about Fareed Fattah and what he was doing before he got caught. Heather, do you want to start us off?
Sure. So Fareed Fattah was an incredibly prominent Detroit, Michigan hematologist-oncologist. He had a practice for about 7 or 8 years in Detroit called Michigan Hematology Oncology. And he, you know, he was so prominent that doctors even sent their parents to him if they needed cancer care.
As you were going through the reporting process, what were you hearing from victims about why they wanted to talk to you about him?
So these victims, they just want their stories told. They don't want people to forget about Fareed Fattah. And, you know, their stories are all very nuanced and they're all very different. But I think that was definitely one of the things that I heard from almost everyone I spoke with upon asking them, you know, would you be interested in participating in this podcast? And, you know, as it's been 7 years since Fareed Fattah was arrested, and, you know, I think that it gets a little bit in the weeds with his appeal process and things like that. But, you know, they just don't want people to forget what he did to his patients.
I'd like to play a little bit of sound from the podcast. One of the patients you talked to was receiving treatment for cancer that she did not have. Her name's Patty Hester, and she first goes to Dr. Fattah after a bout of pneumonia that turned up some concerning blood work. Let's listen.
My internal medicine doctor said, you know, hey, I sent my mom to him. He's world-renowned, Dr. Fareed Fattah, Sloan Kettering graduate. It's your choice, Patty, but I would go to him.
Wow. Heather, as you were talking to patients, how common was Patty's experience?
Very common. I mean, you know, and not just patients, you know, not just victims hearing from their doctors that, you know, they were sending their parents to them, but also doctors seeing Fareed Fattah. There were a few people I spoke with who weren't in the story, but, you know, one person who her father was a doctor in Detroit, and he was very confident in Fareed Fattah. And, you know, that's one of the things that is very important about this story, is that his credentials really covered him almost every time.
Yeah. In the first season of Dr. Death, you were able to uncover all of the missteps along the way of the institutions and the gatekeepers who should have been keeping an incompetent doctor out of the operating room. In this season, it was really interesting how few checks there were on Fareed Fattah as someone who ran his own clinic. Laura Beale, do you think there are any common themes between these two stories?
I think there are definitely common themes. The one I would say, which is pretty evident in the clip you just played, is how difficult it really is for us as patients to know that much about our doctors before we go. I mean, we rely on the tools that are out there, which is, you know, online reviews, which are definitely flawed. That whole process, online reviews and asking around and, you know, looking on paper, but there's really not a lot that we have at our disposal as patients to be able to find out about a doctor. You can get more information about a new refrigerator that you're about to buy than you can about your doctor. And I think that's really makes us feel very vulnerable. Now, the good news is that the vast majority of doctors are, of course, good, caring people who will not hurt you. But if you get that one, then it can be really devastating.
For sure. Heather, what did patients tell you about
why they thought it was that Fareed Fatah was able to get away with what he was doing for as long as he did.
You know, he was a very aggressive, he was very aggressive in his cancer treatment. And, you know, there was one story that, one anecdote that is not in the podcast. I mentioned earlier that, you know, there was a patient who saw Dr. Fatah who was a doctor himself. And they did go to get a second opinion. The other doctor who they saw said, I wouldn't treat this. You know, I would just monitor this. I wouldn't give you any treatment for this. And it made them feel quite hopeless, actually, because you have Fareed Fatah, who's, you know, has these really amazing credentials. Doctors are saying that he's the best in the state. And he's saying, I would treat this very aggressively. You know, we'll have you in remission very quickly. And he gave them a lot of hope. And then there's this other doctor who maybe didn't have the same credentials, who's saying, I wouldn't treat this at all. And so that gave them very conflicting feelings. And really, it was just his, you know, that he was a top doc. That was what, as I mentioned, saved him almost every time, is that he, you know, he did have the credentials to back up these top doc kind of adverts that he had all around his exam room. But, you know, patients would later find out that those were advertisements.
It seems like this approach, you know, to taking an aggressive attitude toward treatment, it seems like that might have a lot of resonance for people who are experiencing a cancer diagnosis for the first time. I mean, it's a really scary thing to go through. And I can well imagine why people might just say, yes, let's go for it, if a doctor of his stature is telling them to go all in. Is that consistent with what you heard from folks?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, patients just wanted this. They wanted it treated. They wanted care. And oncology is incredibly complicated. It's an incredibly complicated industry. And I think Laura can speak a little bit more to this, a little bit more generally about cancer and what sort of treatment is available.
Sure. Yeah. One of the things, too, you mentioned at the beginning of treatment, you're looking for hope. And so you want to believe that whatever he's going to do will help you, which is, of course, understandable and could be correct. I think the other way that he overtreated people to really maximize his profit was that he was very aggressive for a very long time, even past the point when chemotherapy was helping people. He was certainly an outlier in that regard, but I do think that happens in general, which made him maybe not stand out. Is there are studies that show a certain percentage of people, even outside of the case of Dr. Fatah, are getting chemotherapy long past the point that it can help them. And the reasons are not just about money. Sometimes it's about avoiding difficult conversations. Sometimes it's about not wanting to give up hope and wanting to believe that if you just keep doing enough chemotherapy, you can save someone you love. But as Heather mentioned, you know, cancer treatment is very complicated and has a lot of emotions attached to it. And I think what Fatah did was just to exploit all of the emotions surrounding cancer to the point that he could make the most money giving people treatment. And he undertreated people too. I mean, he didn't just overtreat people. I mean, Heather can talk about that. He undertreated people by diluting the amount of treatment that they should get again so he could make more money.
Yes, there was an instance where there were several mentions that he didn't want to open up another chemo vial. So he would just sort of dose people based on very exact measurements instead of on their height and weight, which is how chemo is typically dosed. You know, he just didn't want to waste it, so he wouldn't open it.
Jeez. If you're just joining us, my guests are Heather Schrering, an audio producer and reporter for Wondery, and Laura Beal, a health and science journalist who has hosted several Wondery projects, including Dr. Death. Its second season focuses on the case of Michigan hematologist Fareed Fatah. I wanted to talk a little bit more about the regulatory structure that allowed some of this to happen. Years before Dr. Fatah was actually shut down, there were people who raised red flags. And you talked about a nurse who was initially thinking that she might want to get a job at this practice and ended up filing a complaint with the state of Michigan against him. It's a clip from Angela Swantek, who's featured in the podcast. Let's listen.
Doctors are put on a pretty high pedestal. They're a revenue generator for the hospital. The nurses, we cost the hospital money because we don't generate any income for the hospital. And if you look at a doctor and a nurse, well, he's the doctor. He's the doctor. You are just a nurse. And so here's me filing a pretty serious allegation against a pretty well-respected oncologist in the community. It's career suicide.
Can either of you tell us a little bit more about Angela and why she chose to go to a licensing board with her concerns?
Sure. So Angela Swantek had done this interview. She shadowed a nurse at Dr. Fada's practice, and what she saw there really bothered her. I mean, she felt like it wasn't right, and so she didn't really know what to do. She ended up getting some advice from someone in her billing department where she worked currently, and she went on to, you know, I think she had to Google, you know, how to report a doctor. And I thought that was really fascinating that, you know, she's been in this industry for about 20 years and she'd never encountered that problem before. But, you know, what she saw, she felt like there was serious patient harm going on here. So ultimately what ended up happening is that she got a letter back in the mail about 13 months later that said her complaint was investigated and there was nothing that they found to be wrong, and they closed the case. So, and this came from the Michigan Licensing and Regulatory Department in the state. And I mean, all we know is really that, you know, what the letter says. And it was pretty brief, according to Angela. And, you know, I saw it. So, you know, it's just that's all that it was.
You know, people might infer this from what Angela said in the clip that we heard. But Laura, what other factors do you think might have stopped other people from speaking out about what was going on?
Well, I just want to say I admire this nurse so much because, as you can tell from the clip, it's difficult for other doctors to report and speak up when they see something wrong, but it's especially hard for a nurse because, as she said, I mean, the power imbalance is so great. And we saw this too in the case of Christopher Dunch. I mean, nurses suspected, nurses tried to speak up, but they could not. And I heard after season one from so many nurses who told me that if you try to report a doctor, chances are nothing's going to happen except it's career suicide. So I think that culture needs to maybe be reexamined. And I admire her for speaking up. But as you know from the podcast, she said she wondered if her career was over, you know, after she reported him. And of course, nothing came of it.
Heather, as you dug into the story, were you surprised at how long Dr. Fata was able to keep up what he was doing with false diagnoses and treatments that weren't really needed?
Yes. When I first initially began reporting this story, I mean, it seems like it's too egregious. It was too much to really think, oh, you know, he must have been doing this to just a few people, and that's how he was able to get away with it. But when I really started digging into it, the scale was so shocking to me. And he had almost like six times the amount of patients the average oncologist hematologist would have, if my math is correct. And I mean, his patient pool was on par with like entire cancer centers, just this one doctor. And at every turn, the way he prioritized his bottom line was too much to wrap your mind around at times. And so that was something that I always wanted to be conscious of when I was reporting this and telling the story, just to really hit home that the scale here is really, really enormous.
When you're reporting on a story that newspapers and TV stations have taken some bites at in the past, you have to make some choices about what you can bring to this that hasn't been brought out before. What did you think was missing from Dr. Fata's story that you could bring to it?
Sure. The patient stories were plentiful. There were so many to choose from, but something that I was very mindful of and, you know, what I talked with my team a lot about was how to present to listeners what it's like to live with a diagnosis, what it's like on a daily basis, and what the aftermath was for these patients who were Fareed Fata victims. You know, it wasn't just going in for treatments and especially in Patty Hester's case. This was something that we really wanted to show in that first episode of how it impacted Patty in terms of the treatment that she was getting, but also how it impacted her family, how it impacted her personal life. I mean, she said, I lived like I was dying. I was spending money constantly. And, you know, that was something that we really wanted to capture, was how, you know, what it is, what it's like to be told that you're terminally ill, and how do you go on living like that? And then how do you come back from that after you find out the truth about your diagnosis?
Laura, as someone who's done extensive reporting on medical malpractice, what do you feel like you've learned from all this? If somebody asked you, how do I keep from becoming part of season three? What should people keep in mind as they choose doctors for themselves and their family?
You know, I get that question a lot, and it's just hard to answer. I mean, it's easy to say, you know, if your spidey sense is telling you something is not right about your doctor, or, you know, or this interaction, you know, of course, the easiest thing to say is get a second opinion. I mean, that's what we always say, get a second opinion. But as Heather pointed out, that's not always easy to do. Both psychologically, it's a hard conversation to have, but then you run into issues, you know, does your insurance cover it? Maybe not. How do you find the second opinion doctor? But I think we should try to speak up. And if it's a good doctor, they won't mind, especially if you're talking about some kind of major treatment. If you say, look, I really want to go to somebody else and see what they think, I think that's always a good idea to do. But I do recognize that in practice, that can be a lot harder for patients. But I think, you know, the disciplinary system, we need to think about it. And I see both sides of this. We don't want bad doctors out there. On the other hand, we don't want good doctors falling victim either. So there's no easy answers, but clearly the patient protection system, you know, something needs to happen for these cases, you know, to stop happening. And I don't presume to know exactly what the answers are, but back to us as patients, I just think I have to come back to getting a second opinion, recognizing how flawed that advice can be.
Laura Beale is a health and science journalist who hosts several Wondery shows, including Dr. Death. Laura, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for the invitation.
And Heather Schwering was the audio producer and reporter who was also on the team for this second season. Heather, thank you so much as well.
Sure thing. Thanks.